Good evening. It's good to see you here with us this evening. Appreciate the visitors that are in our midst. I've gotten to meet a few of you here tonight. We're thankful that you've chosen to be with us this evening as well. You know, the sermon title here tonight is Making the Right Investments. And if you think that that's me giving you financial advice, I'm not the person to give financial advice. And so I'm not here to do that with you tonight. But instead, I want you to think about a passage that we read about in Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. You know, our theme coming up this next year is knowing Jesus. And I guess this is a little head start on it, because every sermon that we preach Sunday morning is going to be focused on the Gospels, is going to be focused on the words of Jesus. And this is going to be an example of the type of sermons we're going to be hearing Sunday mornings in the coming year. But this is one that's been sitting on my desk on a post-it note for about 3 or 4 months. And I'm excited to be able to share it with you tonight to think about the lesson. Look at Matthew chapter 6 and think for a moment with me about what Jesus says in verses 19 through 21. In those verses, he introduces two areas in which we can lay up our treasures. He says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." There are a few principles here in this short passage, in these three verses, which I believe are foundational and which I believe are transformational to the sustainment and to the development of our faith. And so I want to think for a while with you on a spiritual level about making the right investments. First thing that I want you to think about as you read this passage is that one of the very basic things it teaches us is that we choose the nature of our investments. We choose. We can choose from one of these two things. We can either lay up treasures on earth, or we can lay up treasures in heaven. We have a choice as to whether we're going to invest our lives into earthly things or into spiritual things. Treasures on earth. As we think about what treasures on earth are, what might those be? A lot of different things. Well, it could be sinful, it could be fleshly things. There's some people that are invested in that. If you're investing your life into drugs, into alcohol, into seeking out sexual pleasure, those are earthly things, those are carnal things. We can choose if that's going to be our life's pursuit, if that's what we're going to focus our life on. But there are some things that may not necessarily be sinful, but they're certainly earthly as well. We're focused on our house, we're focused on adding more clothes to our closet, and especially this time of year where materialism seems to be at a high, we're all thinking about what I'm going to get for the holidays, what I'm going to buy somebody, what I want. Sometimes we can become very materially focused, very earthly focused. And we choose whether or not that's going to be a key point of focus in our lives or whether spiritual things are going to become a key point of focus. Sometimes those earthly things can be things like sports. Does anybody here know when that game's going to be played next week? A lot of you might be revolving your schedule around next Saturday, right? When Ohio State's going to be playing. But sometimes the sports we're playing, it's the things that we're doing. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, I want to read to you a quotation from what Paul writes. He says in verse 24, "Do you not know that those who run in a race, they all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. Everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. They do it to obtain a perishable crown." What's he saying? If you run in a literal race, if you're playing a literal sport, you're doing it for what? For a trophy? For a crown? For a metal around your neck? He says, no, but we are living and running for an imperishable crown. Paul's making this same contrast between earthly treasures and between spiritual treasures. Which one is more important? The earthly focus or the spiritual focus? And he's saying it's a lot more important that we focus on whether we get disqualified from heaven rather than whether or not we lose the competition. And so don't be earthly focused. We have a choice, though. What are we going to invest our life in? What are we going to invest our time in, our treasures, our talents? We choose what we will invest in. And when you invest in one or the other, it requires sacrifice and it requires self-control. And I think that's implied in the phrases that Jesus uses. He says, do not lay up. Well, if you're going to lay up money or time in order to invest in earthly things, that requires sacrifice. You have to give up something else in order to lay up for those earthly things. If you're going to lay up a treasure in one specific area, you've got to sacrifice something to do it. If I choose myself to invest in funding my retirement, then I may have to choose not to take an expensive vacation to do so. I have to sacrifice something in order to lay up for something else. If I choose to buy a new car, and my transmission just went out tonight, so that's going to happen really soon, like tomorrow. So if I choose to invest in a new car, then I may not be able to remodel my bathroom this year, right? If we lay up for one thing, we may have to sacrifice another to do it. But as we look at the text before us, choosing to focus on material things, if your life's focus is going to be on those earthly things, it may very well lead to a lack of investment in spiritual treasures. Take a look as you read on to verse 24. I think Jesus continues this thought. He says, no one can serve two masters. What two masters is he talking about? I think it goes back to verses 19 and 20. You can't choose to serve earthly things and choose to serve spiritual things. You can't serve those two things. Because either you're going to hate the one and love the other, or you're going to be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. The ESV just simply says money. You can't serve God and earthly things. And so as you think about your life's investments, what you're investing your life in, are they truly worth what you are sacrificing to be invested in those things? Well, it's your choice. It's going to require a sacrifice of something. And it's your choice, the nature of those investments. And let's think about whether or not the investments we're making in life are really wise or not. Continue thinking through this text. And take a look at another phrase that we're going to emphasize from this text. I think it's Jesus emphasizing the nature of our investments. If your life's focus is earthly things, if it's money and your house and your car and your clothes and your stuff and your sports and your games and your job and your retirement and your vacations, if that's what your life's focus is centered on, then realize that you're focusing on something that is temporal. It's not going to last. Do not lay up for yourselves, Jesus says, treasures on earth. Why? Well, he gives you a reason. He's not just trying to arbitrarily be, you know, strict and a killjoy here. He says there's a reason why I want you to focus on spiritual things. It's because if your focus is on earthly things, they're temporary. Moth and rust are going to destroy it. A car's going to get old. And those clothes are going to get out of style. And they're going to start to get worn out. Moth and rust will destroy things. Thieves could come in and steal. All those investments that you focused on, well, the stock market could go bust and you could lose all that money that you put into that. Somebody could steal your identity, take some of your money from you, right? That's how we would put it in modern days. If our life's focus is on those earthly things, moth and rust can destroy those things. Thieves can break in and steal. Those are temporary things. And the reason why Jesus wants you to focus on heavenly treasures is because the return on your investment. And when we think about literal money, we're thinking about what's the return on my investment? Well, when it comes to spiritual things and being spiritually focused, the return on your investment is an eternal one. Moth and rust can't destroy it. Thieves can't break in and steal what God has prepared for you in eternity through His Son Jesus. And when you think about that, and when you think about the return on your investment, should the bulk of your life's focus, and as you think about what you're focusing on, should the bulk of your life's focus be on those material things or be on those spiritual things? And when we realize that's the case, here's what I really want to spend the bulk of our time thinking about. Why is it that so many people don't seem interested in the gospel or in spiritual things? Why is it that when we try to teach the lost world about something that's eternal, where our Father has built many mansions for us and prepared those mansions, why is it that some people seem to close their ears and stop listening? And so I want to think, first of all, about unbelievers and why it seems sometimes unbelievers aren't interested in some of those things. And maybe the reason why is we're growing up and we're living in a culture that's taught a very highly secularized worldview that is motivated by the American dream of prosperity. And because we as parents and grandparents have made it so important that we be successful career-wise and money-wise, that we're starting to raise a generation of people who don't care as much about the gospel. When emphasis is placed as parents and as grandparents and as even in our own lives, when our emphasis is placed on a life of earthly success and earthly pleasure, and that's the sign of that you're living the good life, then why should we be surprised that people aren't really interested in the gospel? You've made your focus material things. When we think that earthly success is having lots of money and a nice house and a nice car, and to get that money, we've got to have college education and we've got to have good grades and we've got to be socially promoted. Why should we be surprised if that's what our children and grandchildren begin to be interested in? So the spiritual becomes unimportant in our hearts because the supreme sign of a successful life is climbing the corporate ladder, drinking to the fullest of all the joys that this earth can offer. And if that's what your focus is on, you're focused on something that won't last. That's what Jesus says. From the worldview of Jesus, though, you can acquire all of these earthly successes, and you can still be a fool and you can still be a failure. Because if you have the nice house, the nice car, graduate from the nice school, build up a nice retirement portfolio, have a nice vacation home, but you've missed out on Jesus, then all you've done is invest your life into something that won't last. You're the rich fool of Luke 12. When you think of that, someone who's building bigger barns, somebody who's got so much money that they're just going to build more earthly things, I think of the rich fool of Luke 12. And Jesus says about that rich fool in Luke chapter 12, he says as he speaks of this man whose focus is on the abundance of the things he possesses, he says, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. He thought within himself, what shall I do? I've got no room to store my crops. So I'll do this. I'll pull down my barns. I'll build greater. I will store all my crops and all my goods. I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. And whose will those things be which you have provided? Do you realize if your focus is all on earthly things, nice furniture, nice house, nice clothes, when you die, you're not going to take a single thing with you. There's a really good chance that your kids are going to sell that for pennies on the dollar at an auction. to some stranger who never knew you? And is it really going to be worth it? That we made that such an important focal point in our life. You know, if you follow Jesus, here's one thing that we need to be honest about. It won't always lead to earthly success. In fact, it might be the opposite. In Luke chapter 9, verse 57, somebody said to Jesus, "Lord, I'm going to follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said, "You know, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." What is a nest to a bird? A nest is their home. What is a hole to a fox? Well, the hole is the fox's home. Jesus is saying, if you really want to follow me, please realize there are sometimes I don't have anywhere to pillow my head at night. And following me does not necessarily mean that you're going to have worldly success here. The life of the apostles, it wasn't one of earthly pleasures. The life of Paul was a life of getting kicked out of cities sometimes for standing up and preaching what was right instead. In fact, he said in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, he said, "We are made fools for Christ's sake." People view us as a spectacle. But it is one that produces a powerful return on investment. If you invest yourself in Jesus, I want you to take a look at Mark chapter 10. Where Jesus says in Mark chapter 10, verses 29 through 31, Jesus says, "Assuredly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my sake in the Gospels." What does that suggest? If you're going to invest in me, you may lose out on some earthly investments that people cherish very much. He says, but if you'll leave those things, if you're willing to serve me and leave those things, you'll receive 100-fold. Now in this time, you'll receive houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecutions. And in the age to come, you will receive eternal life. Jesus says, I promise you the return on investment in the long term is worth it. If you'll follow me. And for this reason, we see the apostles singularly invested in their work. Now, we realize those outside of Christ may not be interested, but I want to also think about this as you think about this idea of investment. And that is, how can we get Christians more interested in the work of the church? How can we get Christians more involved and invested? And why does it seem even Christians don't seem as interested as we wish they would? And I want you to think about another phrase here that Jesus uses in verse 21. And I want to suggest to you that maybe the reason we're not as interested as we should be is because we're not as invested as we should be in the work. Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus says this is an issue of investment. If you put your treasure there, your heart's going to go along with it. Why? Have you ever gone through this? Have you ever laid in bed at night and thought to yourself, did I lock my car doors? Or laid in bed at night and thought to yourself, did I close the garage door? Did I lock the back door? I've been there, and sometimes I just lay there all night because I'm too lazy to get up and fix it, right? And you worry about it all night long. And the reason why you worry about it, why? Well, because a car is an investment. And there might be a little bit of money in that car, or there might be something in that car that's something of value, or the car itself might be something of value. My wife's been leaving the keys to the van in the car, hoping someone would steal it so we could get a new one. And apparently no one sees that as anything of value. So you worry about it because you're invested in it. You know what's interesting to me is my kids don't ever, ever, ever lay awake at night thinking, I wonder if Dad locked the car. they're not invested in it. They haven't invested any money in it, so they're not really worried about it. Kids don't lie awake at night thinking, I wonder if Dad locked the back door tonight. Or I wonder if the garage door is open. Why? They're not invested in the house. They don't care if somebody comes in there really too much. I mean, maybe when it happens, they'll care. You aren't interested in what you don't really invest in. When I was in high school and college, I thought my parents were kind of evil. Everybody goes through this, right? I hope. So you don't think that I'm bad. But the reason why is my parents bought me a truck and they said, you're gonna. And I thought, what's up with that? I got friends, their parents bought them vehicles and they don't have to make the payments. Why are you gonna make me make the payments? And I had to share that truck with my twin brother for a couple years till I went to college and then he got his own and my parents did something else. I moved into a house and they said, you're gonna pay rent. And I said, you own the house. Why do I have to pay rent? And then they did another thing where I was going off to college and they said, you're gonna pay for your own college. And I said, I got a lot of friends where their parents pay for their college. Why aren't you paying for my college? And I felt like I was getting the short end of the stick. You know? I got friends and they're living for free. Their parents are paying for their dorms or their apartments or wherever they're living. They're paying for their cars. They're paying for their college. And I thought my parents were pretty evil, but I'm going to tell you what. There's something interesting that happens when you pay for your own car. You take care of it. Because you know if you wreck it, you're going to have to pay for another one. Right? And I did have some friends. Their parents did pay for everything. And they did wreck the car. And they just knew they were going to get a new one. And they didn't care for it the same way. They weren't invested in it. And so they weren't very interested in it. There's something interesting that happens when you pay for your own college. I'm not saying you have to do this. All right? If you want to pay for your kids' college, go for it. But I did not want to fail a class because I didn't want to have to pay for the class again. Because you know when you're paying for it, you're invested in it. You're very interested in being successful in it. And there's something that happens when you buy a house. All of a sudden, you get really interested in making sure you take care of that house. And when you're paying for that house. When we moved here, there's a reason why I had my kids paint their own rooms. Because suddenly they were a lot more interested in taking care of the walls in those rooms when they painted it rather than you doing it all for them. When you get invested in something, you're going to be much more interested in what you are invested in. And so my suggestion to you, based upon what Jesus is telling us here, is that if you notice it doesn't seem like I'm really interested, it seems like I'm kind of aloof, it seems like I just don't really care sometimes, I would suggest to you that you need to start doing what Jesus is calling you to do right here, and is get invested, and you will find yourself being more interested in this church. Invest your time, invest your talents, invest your treasures into the kingdom, and you will be more interested in kingdom things. Why does a deadbeat dad care far less about his kids than a single mom who's working her tail off for her children? She's invested. He's not. Because she's invested, her heart is all about her kids. Why does a child who's made a little broken mug for you, a little mug for you and it breaks, why does he care more about that mug breaking that he made in some art class than the mug that you paid a bunch of money for at the store? Because that child invested in that mug. They've been invested in it. They put time into it. And so they're naturally more interested in it. And when you invest in anything, we are naturally more interested. Now, let's think about this on a spiritual level. Before I went and preached in Barbados about 3.5 years ago, I could care less about the work in Barbados. I didn't know anything about the work. Somebody called me up, said, hey, would you want to come down here and preach with me? Sure. But when you take 2 weeks out of your year, and you go down to this place and you start to actually meet people and knock on doors and teach people and train preachers and baptize people into Christ, it's amazing how your interests in that particular locality will change. Why has it changed? Because you spent time investing in that work. And when you become more invested in it, your heart stays with it. If you're not invested in Amazon stock, will you be as interested in Amazon stock as somebody who is invested in it? No, investment leads to your interest. The more you invest, the more interested you will be. If you did not go to Ohio State and grow up in Columbus, are you going to be as interested in their school and in their teams as someone who did? I can tell you, no. But you're invested in it, many of you, because you did grow up here and you have been and gone to those schools. And so you're interested in those things. The point is this, if we'll invest more into the spiritual work, we'll naturally be more interested in its results over time. So I'm just encouraging you to think about investing. Investing in the things that God calls us to invest in. And so I want to close by just thinking about five spiritual investments that we can make. That Jesus says will have a really great return on our investment. Here's the first one. Invest in giving to the needy. Jesus teaches that in Luke chapter 12. In Luke chapter 12 and verse 32, Jesus says, do not fear, little flock. It's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. So sell what you have and give alms. And provide yourselves. What's the return on the investment here if you'll give to those who are in need? He says, you will provide yourselves money bags which do not grow old, and a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and where no moth destroys. And then notice the phrase he uses, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Invest in people who are in need. Make that a spiritual investment. Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. You read that book of Acts, right? What's another investment that we can make that has a spiritual return? A spiritual investment will be hospitable to those who are many times neglected. It's easy to be hospitable sometimes to our friends and the people that have common interests, common age, common background to us. But Luke chapter 14 encourages us not just to invite people who are your friends, your brothers, your relatives, your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. But verse 13, when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. But what is the return on your investment? You shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just. It's going to be a great return on your investment. Invest in people who can't repay you. Invest in those who are often neglected, on the fringes, if you will, sometimes of the church or even of society. What else should we be investing in? Well, invest your mind on Christ and on things up above. Not earthly things. In Colossians chapter 3. I love Colossians. I love Colossians 3. I love preaching from it. Verse 1 says, if you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. Notice what some of those earthly things are, by the way, in verse 5. Fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry, material things, sinful pleasures, fleshly things. He says, don't let your focus be that. Those are only temporal highs. They're short-lived. They're here for a moment. They're gone the next. But invest yourself in Jesus Christ. Why? Because he's been raised. He's sitting at the right hand of God. He is there. He will be there. He will always be there. And if you invest yourself in him, you're invested in something that's eternal. You died, it says. Your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, you will also appear with him in glory. Put your mind on Christ, not the flesh. What else should we invest in? Are you really treasuring God's word like you should? I asked Matthew to lead the song that he did before we had this lesson. And here's the reason why. I think it's emphasizing the exact point that we're trying to make here tonight. In Psalm chapter 19 and in verse 7. Psalm chapter 19 and verse 7. That's where that song is from. But it's David authoring this psalm, and he's saying in verse 7, "The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether." And then here's this phrase, "More to be desired are they than gold." What is more to be desired? The law, the testimony, the statutes, the commandment, the fear, the judgments of the Lord. All of those things. You should be desiring and longing for those things more than gold. Yes, than much fine gold. They are sweeter than honey and the honeycomb. The richest earthly investment you could make, the most fine meal that you could ever taste, it says God's word is far better than any of those earthly things. And to be desired far greater. So as you think about ways you can spiritually invest yourself, are you investing yourself in the Word? Studying it and reading it and giving it the time and the honor that you should. In Proverbs chapter 3, the book of Proverbs begins, before all of the really pithy sayings begin in the book of Proverbs, it begins with an emphasis on why it's important to listen to these sayings that the writer just goes through. And it says in Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 13, "Happy is the man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding. Why? Her proceeds are better than the profits of silver, her gain than fine gold." You've invested in something that is of far greater value than anything earthly. When you've invested in wisdom and in knowledge. She, that's wisdom, is more precious than rubies. All the things that you may desire cannot compare with her. If you want to live a long life, length of days is in her right hand. In her left hand, riches and honor. Wisdom can lead to riches, by the way, and can lead to honor if we choose wise, make wise choices here on earth. Her ways are ways of pleasantness. All her paths are paths of peace. She is a tree of life. If you want to spiritually invest in something, give to the needy, be hospitable to the neglected, put your mind on Christ, not on the flesh, treasure and obey God's word. But here's the last thing that we read from the pen of Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 6, and that is be rich in good works. And when you invest yourself in good works, you're going to care a lot more about those people you've tried to help by your good works. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, in verse 17, it says, "Command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty." Don't be stuck up. Don't be a snob. That's what Paul's telling Timothy. Timothy, you, as an evangelist, tell people not to be stuck up because they've got a lot of money and they've got a lot of things. He says, and tell them not to trust in uncertain riches. Not to think that that money and those things is going to buy their way into heaven, but to trust in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. And he says, tell these rich people who have been blessed with money on earth to do good and to be rich in good works, to be ready to give, to be willing to share and to store up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come that they may lay hold on eternal life. Do you see it over and over and over again? The contrast is made. You can choose earthly investments, temporal investments, or you can choose long-term spiritual investments. And for you, what will it be? I think it's important for us as we think about what we're investing our lives in to ask ourselves the question, what have I been invested in here? Have I invested myself into those who are discouraged? Have I invested myself in those who haven't been here for a while? Have I invested myself in the widows? Have I invested myself in the poor? Have I invested myself into people who have moved to this country from somewhere else and taken the time to have them over for a meal, to do things with them, to invest in them in their difficult situation? And there's several people like that who are members of this church. Sometimes if it feels like we're really not interested, we're kind of disconnected from those people, it's because we haven't invested enough in those people. Have you invested yourself into God? Have you invested yourself into your neighbor, into your brethren? And so invest in the struggling, the discouraged, the weak. And when you start investing in those people, when you start having them to your house, taking them out to eat somewhere, getting to know them on a personal level, going to their, maybe their kids' ball games, if that's what's going on, having them over for a game night, you will notice when they're not here. Because you're friends. Because you've invested in them. And because you've invested in them, you're interested in them. I mean, you've invested in that person who's really struggling with sin, who's really struggling with emotional difficulties, and you've taken the time to talk to them for hours upon end, to maybe go over there even late at night, to talk to them about what they're struggling with, to have that cup of coffee with them, then when you see they're not here, you'll notice. Because you've invested in them. And because you've invested in them, you're interested in them. And you're interested in their well-being. When you invest yourself in personal evangelism, you'll be interested in the people that you tried to teach and where they're at now in their spiritual lives. When you invest yourself in Bible classes and you spend an entire quarter with a group of kids, you'll be interested in how those kids turned out 10 years down the road. That kid that I once taught when they were just a little child. That kid that I taught in the high school class. When you invest yourself in those people, when you've had that youth devo at your house and you've talked to those folks and they've talked to you about some of the problems they're having, you'll be interested in their lives further on down the road. When you are invested, you will be interested. And so are you making the right investments? That's just what we'll close with here today. Are you making the right investments? Am I invested? Ask yourself in God's kingdom work. Does my heart seem uninterested in the people here, the work here, the future here? And if so, maybe it's because we're not invested in it. What fruits indicate the degree, the proof of our investment? What are you doing on a daily basis to invest in God, to invest in His people? And if you haven't sacrificed to put your treasure with God, your heart's not going to be with Him either. We want your heart to be with Him. Jesus wants your heart. What's the first and great commandment? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, with all of your strength, and love your neighbors yourself. And when you invest in God, when you invest in your neighbors, then you're going to be exactly where you need to be with God. So tonight, if you haven't done that, if you feel like you've fallen short, if you need to be jump-started by prayer and the encouragement of your brethren, then the front row is for that as we sing invitation songs. It's for you to ask for prayer. It's for you to be encouraged. It's for you to confess your sins and your faults if that's where you need what you need to do tonight. And we invite you, if that's what needs to be done, to do that while we stand and while we sing.